Excellent. Ready to go. So one of the confusing areas of halacha in the realm of kosher mishpah is to try to figure out the halachic status of zoning boards and petitions in front of zoning boards. We know that zoning is certainly an essential part of every community. You need to have various zoning laws and regulations of where you can build and what types of structures you're allowed to build, where you're allowed to can have businesses, where you're allowed to have shuls, how many stories, how much land there has to be on the sides, etc. And I remember growing up that a very important part of the infrastructure in my community, we're just speaking about Muncie, where I grew up in Muncie, Eretz Yisrael, in the town of Ramapo. We had planning boards and zoning boards, and it was a big deal. You had representation from different segments of the community on the board, and it was always a very big and sometimes even highly contested type of issue as to what would be approved or not approved in different streets and in different areas of the community to allow a giant yeshiva to be built. It could add to a lot of traffic and a lot of noise, and not everybody always wanted major structures to be built in their areas, whether you're going to allow multifamily housing and things of that sort, or if somebody would be seeking a variance, they want to extend a property and maybe a neighbor isn't so happy that there's going to be another story that's built. It's going to disturb their view or their equilibrium, and particularly if you're building extra wings and units of a house or a building in order to bring in more diurim, more residents, where it might also lead to less of a bucolic, quiet type of existence. Certainly in the early days of my youth, we still had a lot of undeveloped areas of the town. Some of it could actually be described as rural, and a little bit as suburban, then it became more suburban and less rural, and as, now it's become downright urban, I would say. Being in charge of zoning regulations was a big responsibility. I remember when my father, Zichrono Livracha, was appointed, I think, first to the planning board, the zoning board, different levels of authority. I think the planning board would make recommendations to the zoning board. The zoning board would have to make final decisions. And then eventually he worked his way up until he became a town councilman. And one of the major projects he was involved with was the development of a master plan. Master plan for the entire town was where they had to decide as to different parts of the community. Here we would only allow single family housing. Where we go, here we're going to allow multifamily housing. Here we're going to allow four-story buildings. Here we're only going to allow single unit residential homes. And here's where we're going to allow shuls to be built, and here's where you can have shuls. And they tried to accommodate the different parts of the community. There, for example, you had a part of the community where there was a business community that needed a lot more space because they demographically were growing much faster, and they needed to have multifamily housing. And some of the streets where they were building and developing were streets in which people were used to single-family units, and they weren't accustomed to so many children running around, and they were worried that it's going to also create problems with litter and with the amount of garbage that would be on the street, and all kinds of different concerns. I remember once they were showing around my father, who was a Holocaust scholar, so they were showing him the streets, Kaiser, I think it was called. It was the village that was created within Ramapo in the Muncie area for the Vishnitz. They were sort of nervous about how he would react to their plans for greater development and more housing for all of their children. So he looked around and he saw like all of these dozens and dozens of children scampering all over the place. So they were apologizing to him a little bit. So usually the children are more orderly, better dressed, you know, we're better behaved. Don't worry, we're going to keep them neat and so forth. My father said, "What are you talking about? It's like the greatest thing in the world." You know, he helped to build the Rockland Center for Holocaust Studies, which he was constantly talking about the 1.5 million children who were murdered in the Holocaust. He said, this is the most wonderful thing in the world, this thing, all these children running around. So after they loved my father, which was good, because whenever there was an election in Muncie, in Ramapo, there were certain areas where you get more votes and certain areas where you get less votes. In Vizhnitz, they would have, let's say, 3,000 votes or so, so 2,997 would always be in favor of my father. They would always see to it that two or three would vote otherwise, so it wouldn't look like strange or something. But so Baruch Hashem, he did very well. In Vizhnitz, did very well. New Square, so some of those in our own community, which was more you might call a upper middle class modern Orthodox community, they weren't so happy always about all of the developments and the changes that were taking place in the community. But my father understood that you have to accommodate to everybody, and you have to have a master plan which sets forth what makes sense in different parts of the community. But he also felt that you couldn't fool around with what the restrictions were. So everyone understood that he was very understanding and very accommodating. But if you wanted to build a yeshiva where it wasn't zoned properly, so then that wasn't something that he would countenance, that you would do something behind the backs of the zoning board, the planning board, the town council. Rules are rules, regulations are regulations. This is very, very important, because whenever you live in a community, you're expected to abide by what we call the minhag hamakom, whatever are the customs of the town, and every single town has the right to, through its community leaders, to establish rules and regulations when it comes to building ordinances, when it comes to zoning ordinances. This is very important for safety. It's very important for quality of life. So this raises the question, to what degree do these types of boards, where you have to go in order to either request permission for a zoning variance, request permission that you're not allowed to build without a permit, or things of this variety, to what extent does it become a problem that when you are trying to stop somebody from obtaining a permit or obtaining a variance or not giving your approval, if there's an approval that's required of all the residents of a particular a street or the residents of a particular apartment building to agree to somebody doing something, and you're going to come in front of the zoning board and you're going to say, no, I don't agree and I want to protest it. Is that something which is problematic according to halacha, that you are preventing a person from enjoying the full rights and privileges of their property, of being able to develop their own communities within your town? Is it a problem of our coast? Is it a problem of when you seek to redress, let's say, zoning wrongs or stop somebody from doing something in front of the zoning board, which is an agent of the government? You say that it's the equivalent to coming in front of a civil court and taking somebody in front of a civil court. Do I say that if you're building something in your yard that I feel is not in accordance with the zoning laws, you're building an illegal shul, illegal minyan in your yard, or renting out to tenants when you're not allowed to rent out to tenants, and I want to complain about it in front of the zoning board, is that something which is wrong? Is that a problem of Eila Mishpatim Asher Tosim Lifnehem Lo Lifnei Arkos? Is that a problem of going in front of the secular courts? Do I have to bring those cases to Beis Din? What's Beis Din going to do? Beis Din will say, yes, we grant you a zoning variance. Says, yes, we deny the zoning variance. What authority do they have, even when it comes to zoning matters? So this is one area that is hotly discussed and contested amongst the modern-day poskim, with certain poskim saying the answer is definitely one way, another poskim saying the answer is definitely the other way. And I found that there's a tremendous ambiguity and a tremendous lack of consistency in terms of how the post-Kim seemed to deal with this. So I felt that I want to confront this issue. I want to tackle it a little bit and get some sort of a sense of direction looking at all the classical sources. There really are a number of different types of scenarios that I've described. One scenario is where you need to get a permit to do something from the zoning authorities, and somebody wants to contest it. Is that a problem? Another situation is where the person is doing something wrong, where you know that they're violating the zoning rule, and are you allowed to point out that they're violating the zoning rule, even though they might get into trouble? So there's one question of, am I obligated to support what a person does and not contest it? And if I want to contest what they want to do, I have to take it to Bezdin. And there's another question of, is there a problem of reporting an offender? So these then really implicate the two different issues. So I mentioned one already. One issue is the problem of lifneim lo lifnei akum, that you're not allowed to bring court cases. I have a dispute with somebody, I'm not allowed to bring it to civil court. There's a zoning board like a civil court. That's question number one. But then I have question number two of, if I report somebody for a zoning violation, is that a problem of mesira? It's a problem of mesira. We know that these are two different simanim in Shulchan Aruch. You look in the sources, first simon that I gave you is simon chav vav sif alef in Choshen Mishpat, which is the asur lodum mifnei dayane of dekochavim rakol shalehem, which is the prohibition of the yisur of litigating in front of the secular of the secular courts. That's number one. But then you have the issue number two, which is simon shin pei ches in Choshen Mishpat, which speaks, it seems, almost directly to our issue. You look at Sifhei, okay? Sifhei says, "Bali din shaisa b'nei meriba lakarka ola metaltalin." You have two different landowners. Look at the case of the karka. Two landowners who are having disputes regarding property. Each one says, "This is my property." It's a different type of dispute. You might have a dispute regarding where the boundary lines are supposed to be drawn. One of them gets up and he says, "Well, I'm going to go to the municipal authorities." Doesn't necessarily say here that you're going to a civil court. You're going to the authorities. So maybe you're going to an onus, meaning somebody who has control, somebody who is able to exert authority over the situation, not from the Jewish community. So then we put the person nidoy, we put the person in cheirim up until the point in time, not so that they go to a civil court. No, it sounds like that's included in the prohibition, but rather the asu din be Yisrael. They have to go to a proper bezdin. You're not allowed to report the person to the authorities. And then there's a machlokis in the Ramah. The Ramah mentions two different opinions, and there's a bit of a discussion regarding which opinion we hold like, as to whether if a person did this, whether they're considered to be a musr, meaning is this just something where it's not a nice thing to do, but we're not going to treat the person who reported on the offender with all of the stringencies of an informer. We don't want informers treated pretty harshly. According to halakha, you could even kill an informer in certain cases. That's like, you know, pretty harsh punishment. So is the person considered to be a musr or not? So says the Ramah, Mikol Makom ein lo din musr, even though by reporting the person to the authorities, you're not a musr. You're only a musr if you intended to harm the other person, but not if you're just looking to protect your own rights. So many of these cases where you have a neighbor that might complain about what their next door neighbor is doing, that they're violating zoning laws, they're renting out property when they shouldn't, and you feel that, you know, there goes the neighborhood, and you want to preserve the niceness of your neighborhood, or they're raising they're building an extra story, and it's going to make your view a little bit less nice. Maybe you don't have a right to stop them in Beis Din based on the principle of Hezek Re'iyah, that they're going to cause you damage in terms of your view, because many poskim say, as we've discussed in the past, that Hezek Re'iyah just means, for the most part, they can't invade your privacy or block your windows from getting proper light, but not necessarily that you're entitled to the best view in the world. We understand that people are going to build, but it could be that there's a zoning regulation that says the person's not allowed to raise their building another story. So you might say, well, halakhically, I can't stop the person in Beis Din, but I know that if I go to the zoning authorities, they'll stop the person because they didn't get a permit, because they're not allowed to do it altogether. But what you're doing is you're not out to hurt the other person. You have to help yourself. There's a big difference between reporting somebody because you hate their guts and you just want them to get into trouble. They're not your next door neighbor. They live five blocks away. You just hate them, and therefore you want to get them into trouble. As opposed to when you're looking to protect your own rights. So the first opinion, Rabbi Eliezer Mitula, quoted by the Rama, says the person's not a musser per se. Therefore, they're not going to have a lot monetary liability, for example. But then he brings the next opinion that says v'yesh chokin. There are those who disagree, and then in fact, there's many Rishonim, probably the majority of Rishonim, disagree. Usvir along the mikri must of a chayav l'shalim lo kol hazeko im lo ayach averu sarven. And they say that the person is considered to be a musar and is obligated to pay for all the damage that they caused if the other individual in question was not a sarven. What does it mean, wasn't a sarven? Meaning that if the other person was refusing to go to Besdin, so then the first neighbor who's reporting on them might say, well, what choice did I have? I had to go to the zoning board, I had to go to the municipality, I had to go to the civil authorities, because the person wasn't willing to go to Beis Din anyway. So the Shach, on this particular sif of the Ramah, he brings from the Tshuva, the Maharam Lublin, says that he thinks that the Maharam Lublin thought that the opinion should be like the first view that was brought by the Rama, but then he says that this is v'lo nehira. The Shach disagrees with the Maharam Lublin. He says that you look in the Maharam in Baba Basra, the Lohaya Bidoro Kimoso, that he was the greatest in his generation. He held clearly that this would be a din of Mesira, even if the person who reported the other to the authorities was just looking to protect their own rights, because he said that the first opinion in the Ramah was Rabbi Eliezer Mitula, which was only a Shitas Yachid, and everybody else clearly disagreed. And in any event, he says, it could be that even though this is the opinion that we would follow the second opinion, so that there are authorities, later authorities, that argue that, of course, this is only when the person had other options of going to Beis Din. So then the question is, to what degree, when a person is committing a zoning violation, do we say that you really do have other options of going to Beis Din? There's one case that I saw, a very interesting case, where there was a dispute between two parties regarding whether, between Reuven and Shimon, when Reuven had moved into a certain building, so Shimon had asked Reuven if he could agree that he's not going to protest a certain addition that Shimon is going to make to his property. And Reuven signed, "I'm not going to protest, I'll be okay if you're going to go about it." And Reuven had in mind that Shimon will make this change or this addition to the property in accordance with all of the necessary building regulations and get the permits, and I'll be okay. And then a year later, Shimon starts building, but he's not getting the permits. So Reuven protests, and Shimon says that Reuven violated his deal. And number one, he violated his deal. Number two, he's reporting me to the authorities, and therefore I want to recover my costs because this is considered to be a violation of what the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Shin Pei Ches says. You're not supposed to report it to the authorities. So in this particular case, this was a tshuva by Rav Eliezer Chaimov that appears in the publication Hayosher VeHatov. It has all kinds of different Beis Din decisions and determinations. This is from Tavshin Ayin Beis, about 12 years ago, this particular decision. So he says that in this case, it could be that according to both opinions that were brought by the Rama, what Reuven did should not get him into trouble, because according to Rabbi Yezda Mitula, he's just trying to protect himself from Hezek, that he feels that whatever addition is going to be made by Shimon is going to create problems for him, is going to make his own dwelling less enjoyable. Therefore, since it's not for the purpose of hurting Shimon, so according to Rabbi Eliezer Mitula, he's not liable. And even according to the second opinion, he says in this particular case, there were private conversations that took place between Reuven and Shimon, where Reuven said to Shimon, listen, we have a dispute about this, let's go to Beis Din. And Shimon said, I'm not going to Beis Din. Your job is simply not to complain, to let me do what I want, but I'm not going to Beis Din. So Reuven said, well, you're not going to go to Beis Din, I'm going to have to report you. So says Rav Chaimov that in this particular case, even according to the second opinion, Reuven is not liable because from his perspective, Shimon was a sarvan. Shimon was refusing to go to Beis Din. It's true that really he should have actually summoned him to Beis Din and then seen whether Shimon was going to respond to the summons, the hazmana of the Beis Din or not. But at the end of the day, Reuven only went to the municipal authorities because of the fact that he understood that Shimon was a sarvan, so he didn't have any kind of criminal intent, shall we say, even according to the second opinion. So therefore, he thought that really you have both arguments to say that he should not be liable. And then, with respect to whether he had committed himself to not protesting Shimon's actions, and maybe therefore he should be responsible for what we call garmi, that Reuven is now causing Shimon a loss, because Shimon went about and started his building project relying upon this commitment that Reuven made in writing, and if you make a commitment that people rely upon, and then they expend money, so there's a ramah based on a Mordechai that says that you are liable for the costs if you don't come through in terms of what you commit. When somebody was incurring expenses based on a promise, like you promise somebody you're going to go and meet them in a certain location to adjudicate a case, and then they pay for airfare or for a train ride, and they travel to this other location and you don't show up, so you're responsible for paying their expenses. But in this particular case, he said that the posek said that there was an argument that Reuven understood that when he signed whatever it is that he signed, that he signed it with a sort of the understanding that, yes, I'm not going to protest if you get the requisite permits and do everything you're supposed to do. But here he wasn't getting the requisite permits, so Reuven was afraid that if it's not going to be done with all the proper permits, it's going to lead to an instability in the entire building, and it's going to therefore compromise his own structure and his own property if there is not going to be done with all of the rules and regulations of construction rigorously followed, and therefore that was understood in the original letter that he signed. So you see how these things play out. It's sort of an interesting thing. Now, what is the bottom line, though, in terms of the whole fundamental question getting off the ground? How can you even consider the possibility of Beis Din adjudicating something where they have absolutely no authority? So if you take a look at source number 3, there is a statement that was made in what I would call one of the most important articles on the prohibition of going to civil court. One of the most important because it was written in the Journal of the Beis Din of America, which I'm a part of. So therefore, obviously, it's one of the most, but it was really an excellent, excellent article. It's written by Rabbi Yaakov Feit, who is a Talmud of mine, now a Chavir of mine, who is the administrator of the Beis Din for conversions in Bergen County in New Jersey. And he simply wrote as a blanket statement, but as we'll see, not everybody agrees so much with this blanket statement. There is no obligation to use a Beis Din. He says, yes, it's true. It's a violation of our cause if you go to civil court for certain things. But he says, if you're going to civil court for things that are essentially what we call public law, so then it's understood that just like for criminal law, you can't go to a Beis Din. Somebody commits murder, you have to go to the criminal law authorities. So public law, you have to go to the public authorities. That's what the statement says. There's no obligation to use a Beis Din to adjudicate public law matters, such as the allegations of zoning violations. That sounds pretty sweeping. Not only does he say that it's permissible to go to a zoning board if you want to get a permit, that's understood. But even and not only would he go so far as to say that, that you can go to a that you can go in front of a zoning board if your approval is required for the obtaining of a permit and you don't want to give your approval, but he says even to get somebody into trouble. That's what it sounds like. Even if to get somebody into trouble, such as allegations of zoning violations and then other public law matters such as OSHA violations, bankruptcy law, other areas of a public law. However, then he adds, in a case where two Jewish individuals have a private dispute that may implicate public law issues, a Beit Din should adjudicate the matter if secular law allows for arbitration of the matter. So, I don't know if this is a nonetheless a type of statement, but the indication that if it would be possible for Beit Din to adjudicate some sort of a zoning dispute and whatever Beit Din says would be binding and would be followed and would be respected, that's a different story. But otherwise, if it's essentially something that would not be within the auspices of Beit Din, so then no problem whatsoever to go in front of a zoning board. Now there's a footnote to this. There's a footnote. I didn't include the footnote in the materials, but in the footnote he gives the various reasons for this conclusion. The one who originally wrote about this, I believe, is my friend, I mean Michael Broyd, who wrote a book basically on being a Jewish lawyer, and I think he has a section there about Mesira, when is it prohibited to go to the secular courts or not, and I think he had a perspective here that public law matters should be excluded from the Isser Arkos. I believe that's where some of this came from, but basically the main source that's quoted by Rabbi Feit in his footnote is the Medrash Tanhuma in Parsha Shoftim. You'll recall at the beginning of Parsha Shoftim, it says, Shoftim Meshotrim Titen Lecha B'chol She'arecha. You should appoint judges and magistrates, police officers who will carry out the enforce the rulings of the Beis Din in all of your locations. So the Medrash says, Me'ein Shoter, Ein Shofet. If you don't have police officers that are going to enforce the rulings of the Beis Din, so you don't have a Beis Din. You don't have a viable justice system. You don't have a court. And the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, in his commentary, that's Or HaChaim Ibn Attar, in his commentary to the beginning of Parsha Shoftim, he says that, you know what we derive from this Medrash, Tanhuma? We derive that if you don't have enforcement mechanisms, so then there's no requirement to appoint judges to have a Beis Din altogether, because it's going to be a waste of everybody's time. It's going to be an exercise in futility. Meaning that if you have a particular area of law, where even at Beis Din Paskins and they adjudicate the law, it's not going to be enforceable. So what's the point of going to Beis Din in the first place? That's basically the main source that he quotes. Now, he does quote at the very end of this footnote from Rabbi Leibish Landesman, and he says that Rabbi Leibish Landesman argues that you're still not allowed to appear before a secular court or a secular board that's given sort of governmental authority without permission from the Beis Din, even in a case where the Beis Din does not have the ability to enforce the judgment. Because basically what the Tanhuma is saying is that when you set up a Beis Din, you better make sure that you have the best possible enforcement mechanisms that you're capable of having. So if, for example, secular law says we'll only enforce the Beis Din's ruling if you sign an arbitration agreement, you better require the parties to sign an arbitration agreement so that the decision can be enforceable. But if there's nothing that you can do to make it enforceable, so then just tell the parties, oh, you know, you're going to suffer a very, very bad judgment from heaven if you're not going to respect the Beis Din's decision, or you galvanize community pressure like we do in get cases, where a Beis Din might say somebody's required to give a get, and many courts throughout the country will say we're not going to enforce that per se, because it's a religious type of a ruling, and we have a separation between religion and state, we're not going to get involved in religious actions. So then you ensure that you have appropriate community enforcement mechanisms like ORA, like you have organizations that will organize demonstrations and protests If somebody is not giving a get when they're supposed to give a get, just means do whatever you can that's within your power. So, for example, Rabbi Blech, when he wrote his article about the prohibition of litigating cases in secular court, so he has a section in his article, which is published in his Contemporary Halakhic Problems series. So he has a section in which he talks about our parties, let's say in a divorce, obligated to litigate custody disputes in front of a Beis Din. Now, in most jurisdictions, including the state of Illinois, including the state of New York, if parties will sign on the dotted line, they're going to arbitrate custody disputes in front of a Beis Din, any arbitration tribunal other than a court for that matter. So based on the parens patriae principle, that means that only the courts are considered to be the guardians or the parents of the children when it comes to custody disputes, to determine what's in the best interest of the children. Based on that principle, even if the parties sit down in front of the Beis Din and the Beis Din issues a ruling who gets custody, what the visitation will be, if one parent doesn't like that ruling and they go back to civil court will look at the case and adjudicate it de novo, from scratch, without even looking at the Beis Din decision, because it's not considered to be a binding decision. So therefore, given that reality, can you really require that the parties go through this process of arbitration in the Beis Din in the first place, when we know that if one party refuses to comply, it's not going to be enforceable? It happens that there is at least one state where they do recognize the rulings of a Beis Din or another arbitration tribunal chosen by the parties when it comes to custody disputes, and that's New Jersey. New Jersey is an exception to the rule, and I say that the exception is what proves the rule in the other direction here, that if New Jersey can do it, the others can do it too. Every single case that I've been involved in custody disputes in front of the Beis Din for the past quarter of a century and more, have been cases where the parties have gone along with the decisions of the Beis Din, despite our lack of enforcement authority for the non-New Jersey cases. And that's because they know that we go through a very rigorous process where we use experts who the courts would use and respect anyway, and the result would probably be exactly the same if they would litigate the case in front of a regular court. So why go through that entire rigmarole again? But it's more than that. It's also because we ensure that there's basically a commitment from the parties that when they come in front of the Beis Din, they and their attorneys are essentially committed and invested in the process, so that whatever we're going to decide, they're going to then convert into, here in Illinois, we would call a marital settlement agreement, a parenting allocation agreement, where they're going to convert it into an agreement that will be signed by the two parties, memorializing everything that the Beis Din decided, and then the two parties will file that in court. And at that point in time, once the parties sign on the dotted line, of course, it will be enforceable. But you don't know ahead of time they're going to do that, but you simply try to create circumstances that will make it likely that that will be the result. So says Rabbi Blech, just to quote him and let him speak for himself, the fact that the secular legal system does not recognize the authority of arbitrators with regard to child custody is of no material significance insofar as the prohibition of having recourse to our kosher Occam is concerned. The courts intervene in such matters only when a dispute is brought before them. Other than in egregious cases in which a child is taken from a parent because he or she is found to be incompetent to care for the child, the law does not interfere with parental decisions, including decisions pertaining to custody. Therefore, thus, as long as both parents continue to respect the decision of the Beis Din, the courts will not intrude. It's true, as long as they sign on the dotted line afterwards. A dissatisfied parent has the legal right to attempt to overturn the decision of the Beis Din by bringing the matter to court. That's a legal right, but not a halakhic right. But he or she does not have the halakhic right to do so. So therefore, the prohibition before them and not before Gentile courts, lifneim lo lifnei akum, remains in effect. According to the argument and reasoning of Rabbi Blech, which, by the way, we do follow in custody disputes, because we hear custody disputes, and we expect parties that if they're going to litigate custody, we expect them to present that that dispute in front of the Beis Din. Does not make our lives easy, because those are really difficult, vexing, heart-wrenching cases that require a tremendous amount of time and effort and the bringing in of experts of all sorts. But nonetheless, it's part of our Beis Din responsibility. We have a very full docket. I have to tell you, a very full docket when it comes to those cases. So by according to the reasoning of Rabbi Blech, similar to the argument that was made by Rabbi Landesman, that's quoted in the footnote by Rabbi Feitz in his article. The mere fact that it's not enforceable when a Besdin would hear, let's say, some sort of a zoning dispute would not really be a reason not to bring that dispute in front of the Besdin. Just the Besdin, you can argue, would also have to analyze the zoning laws. They would have to make sure that whatever ruling that they're issuing is both in conformance with Torah law and also in conformity with the zoning laws. That's what you can argue. So this is addressed, actually, by the Shevet Halevi. If you take a look at the Shevet Halevi, source 4, Shevet Halevi, a very mainstream posek. Very, very mainstream posek. We know Shmuel Bozner, Sefer Tzadik Livaka, lived in Bnei Brak, and published many volumes of his Shevet Halevi, which are quoted all the time. Now in the Shevet Halevi is one of the most quoted poskim, actually, when you if you obtain the new versions of the Mishnah Brura, where they have the dressed up versions of all of the modern day authorities that deal with contemporary situations and applications of the halakos that are discussed by the Mishnah Brura throughout Orach Chaim. So you have, for example, the Dirshu set in the Mishnah Brura. You have the Piskei Halakos. So now when people learn Mishnah Brura, they learn with these new updated versions that sort of give you all of the modern-day psakim regarding all of the issues throughout Orach Chaim. So one of the most oft-quoted authorities in both of these volumes is the Shevet Halevi, so Shmuel Bozner, a very, very respected authority. So he dealt with this question. He had a tshuva in which he dealt with the questions of turning to a zoning board. This is in Chelek Yud, Simen Reish Sama Gimel in the Shevet Halevi. He starts off by saying, you look on page 2, as you can see, we're doing a leisurely pace with respect to this topic. I have a feeling that this is going to have the subtitle part 1 after it when we get through, but that's okay. Shevet Halevi points out that the Isser Arkos does not only apply to Arkos, the Shel Elilim, to courts that are founded by idolaters and pagans, because the main reason for the prohibition of the Arkos is that you are abandoning, or at least one of the major reasons is that you're abandoning the Torah that was given to us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that is Bechlal Elokim Nitzav Badas Kel Bekerav Elokim Yishpot, that we're going to be reading in our Shir Shel Yom tomorrow morning in Yetzah Hashem. So therefore, any kind of a secular court process, it's not a Bezdin process, is going to be a problem. And that's a lead-in to this discussion, which is in the second paragraph, Mumela, and therefore, to Lozu Bezin Chiloni Ezrachi, not only when I'm dealing with you stand in front of the judges in a court building, that this is the actual secular court, Elagam Iriya, but even if I'm dealing with a municipal agency that is a part of the governmental system, and that would include a zoning board. You could have gone in front of a Bezdin. He starts off by saying that presumptively it would also be a prohibition to bring a dispute between two Jews in front of the Iriya. The Iriya means the municipality, the zoning board court of appeals. Mm-hmm. That's a type of an entity. But then he says, I will allow for an exception if two things are true. Number one, that there's sort of an understanding that whatever it is that is being decided by, let's say, a zoning board type of entity represents what's really the minagayir, what's really the custom that's followed by everybody. I would say de facto, this is generally going to be the case, that if there are certain zoning laws, rules and regulations, those are laws that were established based on what the practices are of the people in the city. They have elected officials. The elected officials agreed upon something. That means the way that American democracy at least is supposed to work, and we would assume the system in Israel as well, the way that it's meant to work, is that this is the voice of the people speaking, that these are the regulations that we agree that we're going to follow. It becomes minagayir. What you have later on, that we will see, God willing, eventually, is a split amongst the authorities as to how do we react when the reality is on the ground that this is not the case. What do I mean by that? That there were all kinds of rules and regulations. Oh, you want to make this type of a building, you have to get a permit. You want to have a wedding hall, so you have to be permitted to have a wedding hall and not just have a yeshiva in which the basement happens to also double as a wedding hall. Where you want to do various things that if there's a rule on the books, so of course we follow the rule in the books. But let's say that you live in a community or society where many, many people don't follow the rules. People will make additions to their houses all the time without getting the permits, without getting the permissions. So certain types of buildings, whether it be shuls, whether it be additional wings of your house that you're going to rent out, that you're going to use for business income purposes without getting the requisite approvals. You're going to do construction on your house without necessarily the construction contractor being appropriately licensed and all the work has been appropriately certified and all the permits have been appropriately pulled, and people do this all the time. Do we say that that changes the equation? Do we say that changes the equation? So some authorities say that yes, that changes the equation. The Emek HaMishpat, the author of the Emek HaMishpat, which is a very fine compilation of rules of halakha when it comes to laws of nezikin, when it comes to dinei mamonos. He has a whole section, a whole volume, I should say, Chelek Gimel, devoted to dinei shchenim, laws regarding neighbors. He says that changes the equation. He says that if the person really could do everything without getting the permits, because the minhag is not to follow the minhag, so to speak. The minhag is not to follow whatever the zoning rules and the city regulations are. So then that changes the equation. That's what he says. And others say, what are you talking about? It doesn't change the equation at all, because Lemaisa, at the end of the day, and this is something that I saw in a tshuva by Rav Ido Rechnitz. Rav Ido Rechnitz is one of the dayanim for Eretz Chemda. So he has a tshuva on a building variance dispute, and he says that it doesn't really matter, because even if the people are not necessarily following the minhag as a general rule, however, that's only when somebody doesn't protest. But the minhag is that if somebody protests, so then it becomes necessary to follow all of the rules. So he said that it still doesn't change the minhag hamakom, that you got to follow all of the rules and regulations. The only departure from the minhag is that if there is a tacit agreement amongst all of the local residents that they're not going to complain, and everybody is satisfied with it, so then they break the law. But if not everybody is satisfied, so then the minhag still is that you got to accommodate everybody, because once there's a protest, so then it's going to be taken seriously. So this is his first condition. How we apply that first condition will depend upon your perspective. But his first condition is, if there really is a minhag to follow whatever happened to be the rules of the local community, so there might be a rule that you can't build a second story of your house without permission, even though halakhically it wouldn't otherwise be a problem. But then that becomes a binding minhag. That's a rule. That is condition number one. What's condition number two? The Iyavsha Lipsok Api Bezdin. It would be impossible to have a binding ruling from the standpoint of the Bezdin, because the governmental authorities will say, who are you, Bezdin, to decide whether this is right or whether this is wrong, and therefore we're going to disregard it? So he says that if both of those factors are in place, you have number one, a binding minhag, and number two, it's impossible to have a Bezdin issue a binding decision, then yesh makom lifnos le'ir, lishnai kefi minhag makom amikubol. Because then you would have the ability, you would have the right to turn to the city or authorities. And he says, because he doesn't really consider that to be arkos at the end of the day. And it's a very interesting thing. And this is sort of like the third piece that he's throwing in. At the end of the day, it's a zoning board. It's not actually a civil court. And he says that really all that the board is doing is telling you, follow the minhag of Medina. They're not saying, oh, let's look at the following statute and the following case law and ensure that the civil court system is going to be imposed upon the Jewish community. No. All they're doing is saying, see to it that you're following the minhag. It's just, it might be comparable to the ruling of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, that if I had two merchants who have a dispute regarding their area of industry, it might be the diamond industry, and Reuven says to Shimon, I want to adjudicate the case in Bezdin. And Shimon says, nothing doing. There's an arbitration board of the diamond industry. Let's go in front of the arbitration board of the diamond industry. So what do? Rabbi Akiva Eiger quotes a Maharshach, who says that Shimon has the right to compel Reuven to go in front of the arbitration board of the diamond industry. They might not even be Jewish. Why is that? Because it's not really our coast. It's not really considered to be a secular court. It's just the people with expertise in this particular area who are able to pronounce what are the minhagim, what are the customs that are followed in this industry. They say, oh, did you have a handshake? Did you say mazal u'bracha? Good. Then you have a binding transaction. Nothing to do with what it says in the statutes and the case law. It's all based upon industry custom. So the same thing over here. It says that the Shevet Halevi, Ridera Klal Ina Iriya, Poskim Mamash, Elakofim Lakayim Minhag Medina. They're just requiring the people to follow whatever is the Minhag Medina. Because they nearest Sheminhag Zekvan Iskabla Yidei Adas Kulam. Then he reiterates, but it has to be a Minhag that everybody follows. Then look at the next line. He says, now you also ask me, Kvotarasa, you also ask me, Laka Shiriya Isha Tachnis Beniya. Now, this is, I understand in the first instance, that maybe you have to have sometimes an appearance in front of a zoning board that everybody shows up. Are they going to approve this building plan or not? Are they going to approve this multi-housing, this multi-family housing plan? Are they going to approve this building of the yeshiva? And the only way it's going to get approved is if you go in front of the zoning board and they're just filing the minhagim, so you go in front of the zoning board. I understand. But let's say they've approved it. Everything has approved it. But now, there is an opportunity, not a zoning violation per se, but an opportunity for a neighbor to get up afterwards and to say that I want to protest this decision. I want to appeal it. That's why we have a zoning appeals board. I want to appeal it because I'm going to be terribly affected. I'm the next door neighbor. You just approved the yeshiva across the street. You just approved their petition to open up a wedding hall so that they'll be able to make additional income. But this is going to prevent me and my family from going to sleep every night because the music is going to be blaring so loudly. I remember we had a situation like this when I was growing up. One of the neighbors complaining about this. The music is going to be blaring so loudly, none of us are going to get any sleep. So do they have the right? It was that Netzer Kepenia Learkos. So says the Shevet Halevi, oh, so once you already have a determination that was made by the zoning board, and that the municipalities have already approved it, and that's something that they could do. He says, Yira Devadai, Olav, Latzia, Litzad Hashin, Listayim, Bebezdin. When it comes to protesting something which they have already approved, they already went through those channels of something that they has to be done by the zoning board. They did their part. They're done as far as they're concerned. So then he says, at that point in time, it should go to Bezdin. He draws a distinction between sort of the initial turning and then somebody wants to protest. So the protest, he says, should be done in front of Bezdin. But this is the last paragraph. If one of the sides does not accept the Das Torah, they're refusing to go to the Bezdin. Let's say that the school that received permission, or this developer of the multi-family housing project says, I'm not going anymore, I got my approvals. But according to what he wrote, it could be that the municipal authority already decided it. Oh, she'an shechok, that's the second part. She'an shechok is rocky, lo yikabu binyan zeb psak bezdon. The second part is, or even here as well, let's say, he goes back to his initial statement. Let's say that the municipal authorities won't accept the psak of the bezdon. Ve'atzad sheni mafsid. And they're just going to imoya arev bevadas the ira sheishem kach negdi shuriya iria. If the party that is affected is not going to be able to accomplish anything, If they don't actually bring their petition in front of the zoning board, because the zoning board is not going to listen to the decision of the Beis Din. So pshita de'ein al ze israeli chalar kol. So he says that he thinks that it is 100% clear that there would be no violation of halicha la'arkos in this particular case. Then he throws in a footnote in his bracketed phrase towards the end, which shows us that one of the components that he's very much relying upon over here is that he doesn't think that this type of a board is necessarily arkos altogether. Why do I say that? Because he says, Ibra, you're talking to Kambinei Brak, as I said, he lives in Bnei Brak, where the Rosh Ha'ir are all Tamidei Chachamim. This is Bnei Brak, after all. So even the city council people are all going to be Rabbanim with long beards and so forth. And they were accepted by Rosh Ha'ir. Maybe they have the status of Zayin Tuvei Ha'ir, who get to make these determinations anyway. And therefore, it would not even be a problem of Arkos, where you have to go to a separate Beis Din entity. Not everybody necessarily saw things that way. Why is that? Because the Minchas Tzvi, Rav Tzvi Spitz, says that whenever you have a sort of an official governmental board, like a zoning board or a zoning appeal court for a particular municipality, even in Israel, that is considered to be a governmental entity. So it does not make a difference if all the people on the board are Tamidei Chachamim, they're essentially serving as ambassadors of the Arkos. So therefore, he doesn't necessarily accept it. But if you accept all of the Shevet Alevi's arguments, so then you come to this conclusion that under those circumstances, this would be permissible. So Rabbi Feit makes allusion to the Shevet Alevi in his article, and he says, also see Shuvah Shevet Alevi, who addresses the case of one who wishes to contest the decision of a zoning board. He argues, since the government will not recognize the decision of Beit Din, and as such a decision will be unenforceable, it is obvious that no prohibition of going to secular courts apply. So that's what he says. That's his summation of the Shevet Alevi. Now, you have to understand, what does that mean exactly? Who's protesting it? The one who's protesting it is the one who is not happy with the decision that was already made by the zoning board. The defendant was perfectly happy with the decision that was made by the zoning board. So what does it mean? What do I care whether the government recognizes the decision of the Beis Din or not? The one who's protesting it, obviously, if they lose, so they're not in a different position than they were when they began the case. If they win the case, believe me, they're not going to be protesting the decision of the Beis Din. So who are we concerned about? It's not going to be respecting the decision of the Beis Din. It would be, let's say, this entity that already received permission from the zoning board, that they're not respecting the decision of the Beis Din. Well, again, if they're agreeing to submit to the Beis Din in the first instance, so presumably that would mean that if there is a decision that's issued against them, so if they're showing up to the Din Torah, you can at least summon them to come to the Din Torah. You'll find out if they agree to sign on the dotted line, so presumably they'll go along with it. So maybe what it means is as follows, that it's going back to the first argument that was made, cited in the name of the Ora Chaim HaKadosh, which is that, yes, it's true, like in the custody dispute case, it could be that the developers, to show their good faith, they'll agree to appear before the Beis Din. But if the Beis Din says, I'm sorry, despite the fact that the zoning board is allowing you to have this wedding hall, the zoning board is allowing you to have this multi-unit family housing, nonetheless, we're not going to allow it. So if at that point in time they say, well, we kind of were showing our good faith because we assumed the Beis Din would go along with the zoning board, but if you're not going along with the zoning board, we're not respecting the Beis Din's decision. So maybe what the Shevet Alevi means to say is that if they would react in that fashion, there'd be no way to enforce the Beis Din decision because the zoning court will say, well, you didn't have the right to arbitrate this. This is not capable of arbitration, and therefore our original decision stands despite the fact that you signed the arbitration agreement and that the Beis Din ruled against the other party. We're not going to enforce the decision against the other party. Could be that's what he's getting at. But if that's what he's ultimately getting at, so then we're back to square one, which is that if you accept Rabbi Landesman's argument and you accept Rabbi Blake's argument, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter that it's not enforceable. It's still something that should be brought to Beis Din, and the person who might lose the case, even if the other party can't enforce the decision against them, is just expected to respect the Bezdin's decision, so maybe then it still would follow that the case should l'chatkila be brought to Bezdin. So I think that in part, I believe in part, what the Shevet HaLevi is relying upon is that, especially for what he's writing about in B'nai Brak, he doesn't really view the zoning board as an extension of the Arkos. But if you do have some sort of, let's say, chutz la'aretz, zoning agency, which is a much more clearly part of the governmental system, so maybe even, and I know I'm going out a little bit on a limb over here, but maybe even the Shevet HaLevi would see things differently. There is a brochure that I picked up a number of years ago called Isser Halicha La'arkos, that was written by a number of Tamidei Chachamim, that provides a number of different applications as to the Isser HaArkos and the scope and parameters, and has some haskamos. Most are authorities whose names I don't really recognize, but there is one significant haskama, and that is from Rav Avraham Chaim Sherman, who is a chaver in the Beis Din HaGadol in Yerushalayim, or at least was. He may be retired by now. And he sort of has a breakdown of exactly what would be those circumstances in which one would have the right or not have the right to turn to the zoning boards. And I have to just give a disclaimer. We're about 55 minutes into the shiur, but I haven't really gone through the classical primary Mara Mekomos upon which this entire discussion is really premised. And part of the reason is because I want to just give you a flavor of the modern day applications before we look at some of the more, you know, picayune discussions going back 500, 600 years ago, having to do with the Maharik and the Cheskas HaYishuv and stopping somebody from moving into a community where maybe they'll open up a business and compete with the existing business owners. And the Maharik says, no problem, a community can stop somebody from moving into their community, and that sounds a little bit scandalous, but that is the opinion of the Maharik. And much of the discussion of the degree to which you can go to authorities to stop people from doing something is based on the Maharik, because the Maharik said you can go to basically the Sarah Ir, the governor of the city, and say, don't let those Jews move into the city over here. So we will get into that, God willing. But here, just to give you the summary from this interesting kunturis, B'niya mafriya fogaz b'skuyas hashchedim, that if you have somebody who's engaged in a building project and it's going to be bothering the neighbors, so he starts off with the premise that you want to protest somebody's building project, so of course that should go in front of a Beis Din. So he says you got to start off, you want to come in front of the zoning board, maybe the Beis Din will determine that it's a waste of their energy. It's a waste of their energy and their talents and their time to adjudicate the case, because it's going to be a futile exercise anyway. That could happen to us even in custody disputes. We may decide one party is so likely not to pay attention to what we say that we'll just give a heter for the other party to go to secular court. We might do that. But what they basically say is, but let the Beis Din make that determination as to whether this falls into the category of the type of case that should be brought directly in front of the zoning board. Then he writes as follows. He says, he says that one thing that you could do is you can ask to file, let's say, a TRO to stop somebody from beginning a construction project before the matter is properly adjudicated in Beis Din. Let's say the person's going to go ahead with building something which you feel is in violation of the various zoning rules. So then he says, you can go to Beis Din and say, to please put an equal, please file an injunction. Now, let's say that the Beis Din is not capable of issuing an injunction because Beis Din doesn't really have jurisdiction to issue an injunction. So many authorities would say this is based on Rav Moshe's heter, to go to secular courts for an injunction. As long as you're going to adjudicate the case to Beis Din, you can file the injunction then in secular court. Say, I want to stop this building project, but yes, for the underlying adjudication, I'm prepared to go to Beis Din first. At least I'm prepared to go to Beis Din to find out if it's permissible for me to argue this case in front of the zoning board. And then the last thing that he says that I think is just worthy of mention is as follows. He says like this. He says that If it's before the construction has even begun, there is a circumstance where you can show up just to register your protest against the building project beginning, gone below head to Besdin, even without a head to from Besdin. And in the event that, let's say, that you have either a building board of a building, or you have a zoning board of a community that basically calls for a public meeting, and they say, we're going to permit this unless somebody protests, but we need to have everybody's approval in order, that's a part of the way that the regulation works. We'll only allow for this building project to go forward if everybody agrees. So, B'mikra says, so he has the following proviso, which we'll get into more next time, God willing. If the person feels that their protest is even a protest that would be appropriate according to Din Torah, that according to Din Torah, the other person is going to be guilty of hezekriya, violating a chazaka, whatever it is, and there's a limited time in which the person is allowed to show up in order to voice their protest, so then they would be allowed to voice their protest. Here too, he says, or the Kuntur says, that this is only B'tanai, that if this continues to be a matter that remains unresolved, and it can be resolved by the Beis Din, that he expresses his willingness. He says, right now, I have to express myself, otherwise the building project will go forward. But if there needs to be a litigation, so I am prepared to litigate the matter in Beis Din. And just to cover their tracks, since this is a published article, they say, yeah, mikol makom gam nidon zeh roi v'siyayitzim dayan mumche, kodem agosh esesnagdus. It's always good to consult with your local dayan, go to from the dayan's desk, shir, or whatever, and ask the question before you actually do this. He says, yesh letzayin shegam mikvah shel pidin Torah ein minia meshikna livnos. Then he says, but let's say, according to Din Torah, it's just a question of building another story. Really, you wouldn't have the right to protest, but you do have the right according to the zoning laws. There still are circumstances in which you would be allowed to potentially protest. But every single case requires its own a careful analysis as to whether this protest is considered to be valid according to halacha, or is it not considered to be valid according to halacha, and therefore this requires a careful consultation with dayanim. What is he talking about? When is it that it might be according to Din Torah you don't have the right to protest, but according to the zoning laws and the minhag you do have the right to protest and you could still do it? So this is a whole discussion, as we'll see in the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer talks about how sometimes you still would be allowed to show up and protest, and it wouldn't be a problem of Mesira, and it wouldn't be a problem of any kind of a violation of our kos. And Mir Tzashem will get into that at greater length next time around, but we're past the end of our time for today. We'll continue next time, Mir Tzashem.